This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
It's Monday, the 5th of June. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Dean Arcuri.
Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation. SMS 0427 JOY 949, email onair at joy.org.au, or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
I'm Ian Muchamore, your co-host on tonight's Informer.
And I'm Dean Arcuri. On tonight's show, we'll look at the Philly Guys Rescue Centre. It's the longest-running LGBTI migrant support and rescue centre in Hong Kong. And they put the call out for support to save the space because it could close its doors in less than 48 hours.
But first up, we look at a surrogacy news story. In November last year, the Cambodian government announced an immediate ban on commercial surrogacy. We've been told that up to 60 Australian couples and singles have been impacted by this, and that many, if not most of them, are likely to be gay men. Dozens of babies have been born to surrogate parents since the announcement, and many women are pregnant right now. So Australian LGBTI parents and gay dads are now facing months of uncertainty and stress. Just a few days ago, the Cambodian government introduced a new framework so that parents who already have children conceived or born through surrogacy can now legally take their children out. But it's not so simple. Legal paperwork and a new court-sanctioned process would only allow the children to leave once DNA tests have confirmed children are genetically related, and also the permission of the surrogate mother will be needed to be explicitly sought. Historically, arranging surrogacy through countries in Southeast Asia has been popular for LGBTI intended parents, especially gay dads. First up, I spoke to a gay dad who has direct experience of surrogacy in Thailand and also in Cambodia. In 2015, Anthony Fisk and his partner Joseph, through a surrogacy program in Thailand, had their first child, Celeste. Midway through that pregnancy, the Thai government banned commercial surrogacy. There was much drama, and eventually baby Celeste was safe home in Perth. After that, they wanted to complete their family and chose surrogacy overseas again, this time in Cambodia. Anthony picks up what happened next.
We wanted to ensure that Celeste had a bigger family and had a brother and a sister. We didn't actually necessarily want to have twins. We just wanted to have another child, another sibling for Celeste. So we went to the only option really that was open at the time, which was Cambodia, which is right next door to Thailand. And the same thing happened. The situation was that it was legal when we started the process, and then the laws changed midway through while we were pregnant with the twins.
And when was that?
So that was the end of last year. In November, we got a call saying that the surrogate houses were being shut down and they were being raided by the police, and we needed to do something about it. So we decided to evacuate our surrogate to Bangkok. So we thought it was best that she leave the country and go somewhere safe. She decided she wanted to go to Bangkok to have the child. The situation was that we tried to fly her out on a plane to Bangkok. She was stopped at the gate and questioned. She had to go through a land border to leave Cambodia. So, I mean, we were very, very worried for her sake. And the situation is quite fluid in Cambodia. The legal basis for what they're doing is not there. It's very different to Australia. So we wanted to make sure that she was safe and that she was somewhere safe.
Joy 94.9.
This is a dramatic story, but apparently not one that's not untypical, with similar stories happening right now. I have to tell you that Anthony and Jason now have twins, Iris and Julian, who are here at home. The whole environment around overseas surrogacy has changed considerably in recent years and continues to do so. It can be difficult to keep up with. We spoke to Sam Everingham, director of Not-for-Profit Families Through Surrogacy, who organised a two-day conference over the last weekend. Sam is also a gay dad. Sam explains here about some of the key changes for LGBTI parents and gay dads in seeking surrogacy in the Asia-Pacific, and also suggests where surrogacy options are heading in the future.
Look, it's changed enormously. We had a lot of the gay market, if you like, engaging in India, in Thailand, in Nepal, and more recently in Cambodia to have children, partly because they were more cost-effective options, they were close by countries, and those markets have now all closed down access to surrogacy for foreigners. And we've had lots of couples get into troubles coming home or with babies from some of those markets as they've closed and laws have suddenly changed. So the options have changed dramatically. You know, there's a cohort of us who had kids in Asia, you know, five, six years ago. The options are tougher now. Certainly the trend has been globally that countries are deciding they want to keep surrogacy more altruistic in nature and restrict it to their own citizens. You know, there's some US states, some Canadian provinces which are comfortable with foreigners, but globally that trend is small. So we've seen Cambodia clamp down on access to surrogacy and shut its borders to surrogacy cases. We've had the arrest of an Australian, Tammy Charles, who is doing a lot of Australian gay cases in Cambodia and Thailand. And it's left a lot of our Australian couples in a very difficult situation in terms of getting their children out of Cambodia. We've got a number of gay couples who've been 3 months or so in Phnom Penh, stuck with their children, couples who are forced to take extreme measures to get their children home. It's really hard for these guys. None of them want to talk publicly about it until they get their babies home, because they're scared. They're terrified about being prosecuted by the Cambodian government, and the Australian government's been finding it very hard to assist.
So what is the Australian government doing? We reached out to the Australian Embassy in Phnom Penh this morning to ask those questions, especially about how many parents are affected and what the Australian government is doing to support them. We're still waiting on that response, but they did post a statement recently on the Smart Traveller website. On that, they say that Cambodian authorities have recently advised the Australian government that the act of commercial surrogacy or commissioning commercial surrogacy is now illegal, with penalties including imprisonment and fines. However, they say on the 5th of May 2017, the Cambodian authorities have advised them that a transitional court arrangements for children born through surrogacy in Cambodia will be put into place, and so that will affect the children that are currently out there. They warn, though, that commissioning parents should also be aware they may face delays in exit permits for children born through surrogacy in Cambodia, pending the development of surrogacy laws and regulations. But it's now 6 months since Cambodia announced that commercial surrogacy would be banned, with immediate effects, and the concerns about how long it's taking for these transitional arrangements to be put in place. Here is Sam Everingham again, who explains what the new process looks like and why he and parents are concerned with how it might be working.
For any Australian engaging overseas, a DNA test is required of the intending father to ensure there's a biological link. The blood test is taken in Cambodia, that sample's taken back to Australia, and that's a standard process, has been for years with citizenship. Cambodia has also introduced a second process of going to the courts, which people are concerned about how long that court process will take in the Cambodian court system. So that's been contentious and is of concern to many of our parents who don't know and hadn't factored in an extra stay in a foreign country with a newborn.
So typically, what's the current situation if parents have a baby out there? How are they managing?
Well, usually one partner's coming back home to go back to work and leaving the other partner there with the child or children. They're taking cheap apartments and living frugally. Some of them are applying for a Cambodian passport for their child and slipping over the border to Vietnam with the surrogate and then flying home via Vietnam.
Are people taking risks?
Yes. They feel like they've been forced to because the exit process has been impossible through legal channels.
And here's some advice from Anthony Fisk on what gay dads in this situation might do. In short, keep calm, communicate, and support each other through these stressful times.
Communicate. I think what's happened is a lot of people have shut down because they're fearful of what's going to happen to them. They haven't done anything wrong. They're trying to have a family, and they're looking after the surrogates that are bringing them their children. The laws are changing without any real notification. They don't know where they stand. So I'd suggest that they communicate with one another, try and help each other, learn the ways out of the country. And I know there are routes out of the country. For example, people have gone through Vietnam, through Thailand, to go to the embassy in Ho Chi Minh City or Bangkok. And in Australia, it's absolutely fine for you to bring your children back because they're related to you.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9, a show bringing you the J's news from an LGBTI perspective.
So we're talking about surrogacy issues in Cambodia. And we've been talking about the parents that are under stress trying to get their children out. We spoke to Sam Everington, and he had some comments on the sort of risks that parents have been taking over several years.
Are people taking risks?
Yes. They feel like they've been forced to because the exit process has been impossible through legal channels.
The changes in Asia Pacific around surrogacy have been in the works, some people would say, for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Thailand banned surrogacy a couple of years ago after quite a famous case.
Yes.
Some people might say that parents that have chosen that option have taken quite a risk.
Look, they have, and look, we have seen a clear pattern that Australian gay men in particular are willing to take those risks and have done for some years now. Initially in India and then Thailand and other countries, they tend to be fairly comfortable engaging in Asian countries and prepared to take more risks than a heterosexual couple will. And certainly we're greater risk takers than people from other countries, and I've just noticed that's the pattern we've seen over the years. That's certainly changing now. We're certainly seeing the gay guys being much more cautious now about engaging in Asia, given the problems they've seen with other couples. We've seen these situations being resolved in other countries over the years. I just have to encourage those parents in this situation to hang in there. They will get their children home. It just can take some patience and connecting with the right authorities.
But we shall give the last word to gay dad Anthony. He says that things need to change.
But what I'd like to see is to make it easier for gay dads in particular to be able to use surrogates in Australia. What happens now is that it's altruistic surrogacy, so you have to find someone in the goodness of their heart that will give up themselves for 9 months to have a child for you. That's extraordinarily rare, and these people are amazing people, but wouldn't it be good if we could allow in Australia for those people to be compensated in some way to have those children? And I'm not talking about truckloads of cash. I'm talking about ensuring that those people are looked after during the pregnancy, and following places like California and Canada, where people are given some form of compensation for looking after those children while they're birthing them for you. So there should be changes to Australian laws so that we don't have to escape to places like Asia.
How?
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9, a show bringing you the day's news from an LGBTI perspective.
We now cross to Hong Kong, where the Philly Guys Rescue Centre, which is the longest-running LGBTI migrant support and rescue centre in Hong Kong, is set to close its doors.
Over one-third of Hong Kong's migrant workforce come from the Philippines. And in Hong Kong, there are no employment protections for LGBTI people, so workers can be fired for being gay.
By law, migrant workers must live in residence with their employers. Often, this can leave them very vulnerable to exploitation and discrimination, which is further compounded if they're living with homophobic or transphobic employers.
The Philly Guys Rescue Centre provides an invaluable safe space for LGBTI community to get support and legal advice, as well as counselling and, in extreme cases, a roof over the victim's head.
But last year, Mars Bellaro, a trans man who owns and runs the centre using his own wages to do it, has fell ill and he's been unable to pay rent, meaning that unless funds are raised in less than 48 hours, the doors of the centre will be closed for good.
5 years back, we were paying around 5,000 to 6,000 Hong Kong dollars. That does not include electricity, water, food, and other stuff needed at the center.
How much, say, of your wage would that be?
66% of my earnings, of my salary, goes to the center. 60%.
What made you want to set the center up?
Back in 2006. Some members who were terminated regularly one or two times a year because they were lesbian. And every time I referred them to an established institution for the mission for Filipinos to seek counseling and assistance. And after a few months, they get terminated again. And then, so I tried to talk to them why they are terminated. And I found out that they were closet lesbians. They keep their clothes in their backpack during Sundays and change their clothes when they get back. And the moment the employer notice or discover that they are lesbians, they get fired. In 1991, I tried to organize a pool of LGBT employers, LGBT supporters, who can employ lesbians and trans men and or gay people to employ them as their household helper. So this began while waiting for their cases, so they need temporary shelter. It's quite awkward for them to stay with shelter for the other clients because they are different.
Yeah.
So they feel awkward. But then when they came to me, they were free, they were very productive. During our counseling, we do counseling in the seaside, and from then on I will be able to know their potential, and they become active with our organization, and then they will get involved and help other people, other members too in the process. This center became sustained for so many years, and unfortunately, in October last year, I got sick. I had this serious periodontitis, so I couldn't raise the funds, and I don't earn that much.
And of course, with that happening, you haven't been able to keep up with your rent.
I had nobody because my colleagues, my other members were working 6 days a week. Unlike me, that my employer is very considerate. I can do a lot of volunteer work at my extra time.
With the space now, you and the landlord have a good relationship, don't you?
Yeah, we had a very nice relationship. He's very supportive. He even gave the electricity bill for free for 6 months. We did not pay for 6 months. Electricity bill was free.
That's lovely.
In Hong Kong, you need to pay every first day of the month for the rent.
Yeah.
But for me, when I talked to him, he said, well, you're sick, so I understand. But then the third month, he said, I need to pay government taxes. So I really need, I've been helping you a lot. And I hate to see you go, but then I really need to turn over. You really need to turn over the apartment to me and rent it to somebody else. So I'm going to save the center so I can continue to work when I get stronger. I'm now working, but slow pace, not unlike before. I cannot take extra work. Just need to work 3 times a week. I will be back on track around first second week of July, so I'll be stronger and maybe well by that time.
Are you also looking at other ways for income so that you can be more sustainable?
But I cannot do it at the moment. I can do that in the future, yeah.
So the landlord and the tenant clearly have a good relationship there, and in the first 9 hours of the campaign, Mars is already halfway there. But you can help. Their goal of raising $2,140. Make sure that's met.
Now, if you'd like to donate or find out more about the centre, we're going to put the link up on the Informer Facebook page, and it'll also be shared on our Twitter, which I'm sure you're all following. You can go to the Facebook, the Informer Facebook page at facebook.com/TheInformer on Joy.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9, a show bringing you the day's news from an LGBTI perspective. Joining us in the studio is Chief Executive of Joy, Tennille Moisel. Hello,
hi.
Tennille. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
We're in a very interesting time here at Joy because it is Radiothon.
It is Radiothon, yes. We've just passed the halfway mark.
Have we? We have two.
Yeah. Yes, we're in June now.
We're in June.
So about 3 weeks to go.
3 weeks to go. Now, Radiothon is incredibly important for us. For Joy. Mm-hmm. Tell us why.
It's actually our biggest fundraiser of the year. So we raise around about a third of our revenue during this time of the year. And we've been really lucky at Joy that for 24 years we have been able to raise such a huge part of our revenue through memberships and donations, and the majority of people do it during our Radiothon when we put the call out and we talk about why Joy is valuable.
So why do you feel why is Joy valuable to you?
I think the messaging that we've got this year around still needing Joy is probably really pertinent, because I think a lot of people have not really taken it for granted, but we start to get really comfortable. Mm-hmm. And after nearly 24 years, I think it's easy to sort of forget that there are still so many things left to achieve from an equality perspective for the LGBTI community. So Joy is really, really important as an access to news and current affairs, both here locally and also around Australia and the rest of the world. So what's actually happening? So we know that there's so much change that's being spoken about, but we need to keep track of those things. And shows like The Informer are designed to actually bring those messages through to our community.
Now, ways that you can support Joy,
yep,
is by renewing your membership or signing up for your membership or donating.
Absolutely.
The details for that are on the Joy website. But Tennille, what I wanted to also mm-hmm. touch on, this past weekend, you were in Geelong for their equal marriage rally.
Yes, I was. Their second ever.
That's a second ever.
Yes.
Yeah, what was that like?
Look, it was really fantastic. So Geelong's got a pretty extensive LGBTI community, but not really formalised. It hasn't really been formalised. So there's not a lot of, there's not really spaces and that sort of thing. Really fantastic youth programs down there that have been running for a couple of decades. So there's a new organisation down there called Geelong Rainbow, who have kind of kicked off and they're starting to do things like the rally. We've got a trivia night coming up as well. But we had about 400 people in the Little Mallet Mall in Geelong. We had Paige Phoenix come down and tell his story from a trans perspective about what marriage equality means from a trans perspective. He also performed for us. He did a great rendition of Twisted Sisters' We're Not Going to Take It to get the crowd all ready before we took our stroll around the block to let the people of Geelong know that we're here.
Now, when we do rallies like this in Melbourne, a lot of people from regional Victoria get on the train, get in their cars, come and support it. Was there a big turnout in the reverse there?
Absolutely. It was really great to see that there were quite a few people from Melbourne who'd made the trip down for the day. And we certainly, because I'm a Geelong local now, so we certainly didn't let them down, because we took everyone to the piano bar afterwards and we had a big sing-along. So it was amazing with a hen's night. It was great.
So it's going to be interesting because, I mean, you work here at Joy and you're amidst the hub of a lot of what's going on within queer Melbourne. But then to go to Geelong where things are different, it's got to be quite different.
It is. It's really interesting for me to kind of move between the two, because I get to kind of be in the bubble here and in Joy in the middle of Melbourne, and to kind of be in that space where you sometimes forget that discrimination still exists, and homophobia and transphobia and biphobia are very real.
Very, very real.
And then I get to go down to G-Town and I get to go and meet with people who really do on a daily basis struggle because those things are so prevalent. I mean, one of the cheerleaders for the Geelong Cats only 3 weeks ago was actually really badly abused after a game, and they won. a really full-on homophobic attack down there. So it's still real, and there's still a lot of work to do. So I'm really lucky I get to Australia. And, I mean, Geelong's like 60 kilometres down the road.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Geelong's not that far when we really think about it.
No.
But it's still, you know, those communities still need our support, just like we still need Joy. We still need to remember that there's so many people out there that need to hear us, need our strength, and need our support.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us, Tennille.
No worries.
Joy 94.9.
We've had a great show today. What was it like at the surrogacy conference on the weekend?
It was fascinating. There was such a buzz there. And I learned so much about the other options that are really coming through and the passion of the people in that room. There were probably a couple of hundred people there. It was quite something.
Well, and I'm also really grateful having the time to talk to Maz today from Hong Kong and actually seeing what's going on. It's really great that here on The Informer we can get news that's both here and overseas and share that with everyone.
Well, that's why we need Joy to tell those international stories as well, and let's do more.
Absolutely. So that's it for another episode of The Informer. We'll be back tomorrow at 6:30 to bring you the day's big news. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform.
And we'd like to thank tonight's guests. That was Sam, Anthony, Mars, and Tennille.
We'd also like to thank our extended Informer team, including our panellist Hamish, for putting together tonight's show.
My name's Ian Muchamore.
And I'm Dean Arcuri. Remember, you can follow The Informer on Twitter, and you can also follow us on Facebook to see everything that's going on, as well hear us here on Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.